Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome. Very glad you're here, especially since at the same time, VDI optimization at VN Citrix is also going on at the same time. So the fact that you're here, in the immortal words of Sally Field, you like me. You really like me. So, welcome to Sizing at V5, planning and designing a highly available, scalable, and resilient management delivery system. That's a mouthful, I know. This presentation is going to be primarily focused on the back-end infrastructure. AppV is both a packaging and virtualization application format, and it's also a delivery system if you choose that route. And with V5, not only did we make a lot of changes in the client engine, in the virtualization engine, but we also modernized the back-end infrastructure as well, should you decide to use what we call a traditional AppV delivery infrastructure. So, whereas a lot of the other AppV sessions here at TechEd have been focusing kind of on the client experience, kind of focusing on for example, the PowerShell client interface. If you attended Tom and Karen's Circle of Life, you know, that's really, really 100, 200 level, a great introduction. This particular one is for the enterprise admins, the infrastructure guys, the consultants, who have to decide on an AppV delivery infrastructure and have to implement this. This one is also for those people who want a reliable and a resilient delivery infrastructure. So we're going to talk about the criticality of each AppV infrastructure role. We're going to allow you to understand the information and data flow of an AppV-based delivery system. We're going to also talk about how to properly architect AppV for redundancy and resiliency. So a little bit about me. A lot of you may already know me. I have been with Microsoft for 8 years. I used to be a support engineer, then an escalation engineer. I am now an MCS, Microsoft Consulting Services. I am very active in terms of trying to educate the AppV community, but at the same time, I'm also billable and for hire. Hint, hint. I'm currently, in fact, working in Houston with a customer right now, and of course, I've discovered that right next to the office building is a Potbelly sandwich shop, so I'm probably going to be gaining some weight this summer. Where I come, we actually call them sandwiches. But I'm also very active on social media to the point where it's actually starting to get on my children's nerves, which, well, that's my job as a 21st century parent, to troll my children's social networking pages. So you can find me on Twitter. My handle is MadVirtualizer. I'm also on LinkedIn, and I'm also on Facebook as well. So let's go over the agenda real quick. Quick introduction. We're going to talk about the three primary delivery architectures of AppV5. We're going to go over the evolution of the architecture, primarily from 4.x to 5.x. Some features were deprecated, and we made some enhancements. We're going to talk about current feedback from the field for those who are currently deploying AppV5, for those of you who are interested in what customers are currently doing. We're going to then break down the individual components of the AppV management publishing system. We're going to focus on how the management, publishing, and reporting services now function as completely separate entities. We're going to talk about deployment resources, where the documentation lies, and then we're going to talk about sizing, capacity planning. We're going to look at high availability technologies and how they relate to AppV and what options for high availability come with AppV5. And then we're going to talk about what to expect with outages, how to plan for and understand your remediation plans a little bit better. So let's take a quick audience poll. How many of you are new to AppV? How many of you have current AppV5 experience? Okay, how many of you have AppV4.x experience? All right, here's another one. How many of you have SoftGrid 3.x in earlier experience? Wow. So, a few assumptions. The assumptions I'm going to make is that most of you, even if you're new to AppV5, have been surveying AppV5 and have been reading up somewhat on AppV5. Hopefully we'll have time afterwards for questions, but the nice thing about a session like this being at the end of the day is it won't be so bad if we run over a little bit, so please feel free to hang around if you have any additional questions for me. All right, where are the docs? The docs are out there. We have now published on TechNet a capacity planning doc. We have now released an AppV5 best practice analyzer. This, of course, requires the baseline configuration analyzer. I hate that term, best practices. I prefer the term current recommended practices, because best practices may change from time to time. But that's what they call it, and I just grin and bear it. We also released recently some performance guidance to coincide with the release of Service Pack 2 Hotfix 4. And we also have our supported configurations available on TechNet as well as a planning for server deployment. These are critical resources to start with. All right. The three AppV delivery architectures that you have available to you. The first one, and the focus of this particular session, is the AppV publishing infrastructure. Now, we're undergoing right now kind of a nomenclature evolution. We've traditionally called it the management system, but you've got to understand, in previous releases of AppV, the management server was the be-all, end-all resource. Everything was handled by the management server. We had publishing, we had entitlement management, operations management as well, and of course reporting. But the primary interface to the client is actually the publishing service, which is why we kind of refer to it as AppV publishing instead of management, but you'll hear them often interchangeably. It's fully integrated with the AppV client. And then of course we have Configuration Manager 2012 SP1 integration or later. This is also fully integrated as well. In fact, we prefer that you use Config Manager if at all possible, just so you don't have to necessarily stand up a brand new infrastructure. If you have AppV5 rolled out and you want to manage it with Config Manager 2012, SP1 or later, and that does everything you need for it to do, then by all means, use your existing Config Manager infrastructure. And then finally, we have standalone. Now, standalone didn't really mean as much in the past, because standalone meant you had to do a lot of work on the side of working with our proprietary commands and our proprietary interfaces or the MSI wrapper. You had to provide special configuration to your client. But with the fact that the client now defaults to standalone mode upon installation, standalone mode is actually not hard to implement. And now that we have a rich PowerShell COM WMI interface with the AppV5 client, a lot of people are finding success implementing standalone infrastructures, especially if they're republishing out there with Citrix XenApp. But at the same time, we have scenarios where we might find more benefit with something more fully integrated. So, what's in scope is the AppV management infrastructure. It delivers desktop configuration control, delivers applications and virtual environments through the use of what we now call connection groups, which is a way of creating a meta environment of multiple virtual application packages. We can target users and we can target machines. We work with lightweight RESTful APIs. So the management infrastructure is very easily scalable. It also supports reporting as well. The reporting is client-driven, and the client uploads to a reporting server, and then that reporting server stores it in a reporting database that is now separate from the management database. It's very resilient and scalable, and you have rich UIs. If you are GUI, you can work with our Silverlight console in XAML, or you can use PowerShell if you prefer PowerShell. With the RESTful API, some people are writing their own. Out of scope for this particular presentation is Config Manager 2012 SV1. But it's important to mention that with Config Manager, you can also target users and computers. You can also deliver applications to virtual environments. It also allows you to use your existing electronic software distribution system. And again, it's the best choice if you have Config Manager deployed. But there's an asterisk, and we'll talk about the asterisk and what I mean by the asterisk as we progress. Standalone, again, the client runs standalone by default. Applications are delivered through MSI wrappers or preferably through PowerShell. You can even leverage common WMI if you want, if you're writing your own tools. A lot of our MVPs out there are writing tools, and we encourage that, and the more the merrier is what my opinion is with that. It also allows you to leverage APV5 with existing non-Microsoft ESDs, like Alteryx, for example. And it also is kind of ideal if you're developing your own alternative conduit. So, let's talk about key architectural changes from 4.6. One of the APV MVPs had a quote when V5 was released, "The cheese has been moved." We all had to relearn APV to an extent, including myself. Going forward, we're assuming that you're looking at the management and publishing infrastructure. So one of the first things you want to know about V5 is how does it differ from the 4.5, 4.6 management infrastructure? Well, we've made some improvements. Role segmentation and separation. It's hard to scale without role separation and segmentation. So we now segment the management, reporting, and publishing data. Some of you I have worked with, both in a proactive capacity and a reactive capacity, especially when I was in support. So you understand the value of SQL no longer being a single point of failure. I've stayed up many nights with customers troubleshooting failed SQL database stores. And we had to get it back up because we had to get the applications running again. Publishing data is now flat XML. It's not coming directly from SQL. Our protocols. RTSP has been replaced with HTTPS for primary publishing and the choice of using SMB or HTTP for streaming. It is more scalable, more cloud-friendly, and definitely more firewall-friendly. We now have a flexible shared content store. How many of you use 4.6 or are currently using 4.6 in VDI? How many of you are using or have attempted to use the 4.6 shared cache? Well, shared cache, Well, let's just say the shared cache was a shared cache, and leave it at that. The shared cache has now been replaced with a flexible shared content store. And the reason we call it a shared content store is because now it's a universal content store that can be shared with your stream to disk computers, physical computers, laptops, and your what we call stream to memory, or your non-persistent or persistent VDI, or RDS, that are using a shared content base that achieved the same effect as a shared cache but did not require a separate package store that had to be serviced. It's dynamic. We now stream applications to memory when we actually use the shared content store, so it allows us to use one location of our APV packages. No more creating that 20 or 40 or 100 gig FSD file that you have to pre-stage and take all your VMs offline if you want to add an application. All of that is completely a thing of the past. And we find that more and more people are adopting the shared content store as opposed to the shared cache. Management. We can target now machines and users as opposed to just users. We also have in-band connection group management. Now, for those of you who are new to ATV5 and who are new to ATV in general, prior to V5, we had a mechanism of joining multiple virtual packages together. It was through something called Dynamic Suite Composition. The problem with Dynamic Suite Composition is it was actually managed at the package level and was not actually in band in terms of management to where we could actually create connection groups, retrofit applications into connection groups from a management console, and then push out those connection groups. It's now embedded into WMI, which allows it to also be managed by Config Manager, and it pretty much completes the vision with regards to meta virtualization environments. So, now we get to the slide where I have a lot of feedback in terms of deprecated features. License management by the ATV management server. We had a feature that was tied to the legacy RTSP protocol, where we could actually use ATV for restricting application launches according to licensing models that you could create and manage in the ATV management console. This was kind of a holdover from when we converged the older SoftGrid product into our desktop optimization pack. And what we had to do is we had to make some decisions on features that we wanted to bring over and features that we wanted to refine and add to the experience. And what we recommend for licensing management is that you use some other metering solution that is more scalable and more designed for that particular purpose. Because a lot of people felt that the licensing management gave them what they initially needed, but they really wished that they could add features here and there, and we had to make a decision going forward with V5. Provider policies. Provider policies, what we found is this created often another access layer that created many support incidents because people were having to double up their security and permissions management. This was also tied to the RTSP protocol. Another bit of feedback that we're getting is application permissions. Right now, we entitle at the package level in V5. Our customers miss from V4 the capability of going into that package and entitling individual applications within the package. We've received that feedback. Right now, the current recommendation is to actually leverage AppLocker for restricting those applications. Text-based logging. We do not use text-based logging. We've now moved to a more common ETW-based logging format. And this logging format is designed not to hinder performance as much as text-based logging did. So gone is the SFT server log file. We now leverage logs for individual services and components that can be enabled in the event viewer depending on the level of verbosity that you need to actually log. It also makes it easier to automate, create event forwarding subscriptions, and to integrate with Ops Manager as well. We also no longer provide canned reports within the management interface. What we wanted to do with reporting is allow a flexible model that could have you design and use your own preferred report viewer. Obviously, we recommend SSRS, SQL Server Reporting Services, but you're not just limited to that. I personally like Excel, but that's just me. And in addition, we recently made available some sample canned reports that I'll show you a link to a little bit later. So let's talk a little bit about some of our feedback from the field since we actually RTM'd at V5 18 months ago. Well, what we have found is all the customers who have rolled out at V5 and given our feedback, we have now incorporated all that feedback, incorporated all those bugs, and we've fixed a lot of stuff, and here is what you should be using. And for those of you who are listening to the recording, please bear in mind that this is May the 15th, 2014, and this could be subject to change. But as of today, you should be using ATV5 SP2 Hotfix 4. Better publishing experience, more flexibility with regards to how you configure publishing in terms of persistent versus non-persistent scenarios. We've had some numerous bug fixes and what I like to call retro DCRs, where they're not really DCRs in the sense that we're introducing something new to ATV in general, it's just new to ATV 5. For example, the sequencer, when V5 was released, did not have the save as new package functionality. That's now back with Hotfix 4. I like to refer to that as an example of a retro DCR. The server is still at SP1. At V5.0, SP1, and by server we mean the management, publishing, and reporting. So the at V5.0, SP1, Hotfix 4, not to be confused with SP2, Hotfix 4 on the client side. The biggest thing that we've seen is this fixes the Silverlight scroll issue with the management console. People were very happy to have that fixed, as am I. The data center trends that we're finding from the field in terms of where the ATV publishing and management infrastructure is being used more often is in non-persistent scenarios. We find that the primary and popular virtual application delivery infrastructure for persistent, like RDS and XenApp servers, CM integration seems to be the preferred choice, especially if they're using, for example, Citrix XenApp and the Config Manager integration components that XenApp makes available, Loki and Modi and those code names. They're nice little snap-ins that hook into Config Manager 2012. For our non-persistent XenApp and RDS, we're finding ATV publishing to be the preferred choice in those scenarios because the ATV publishing server can actually deliver applications quicker than the Config Manager infrastructure. For virtual desktops, again, persistent, static VDI, and Xen Desktop, we're finding Config Manager integration to be the most popular one, and in the same regard, non-persistent, pooled VDI, provisioned VDI. There's so many ways this we refer to non-persistent. The ATV publishing tends to be the preferred choice. So you're going to have to rethink the way you look at a typical enterprise deployment. When I'm visiting customers on site right now, especially if they want me to review their infrastructure, their first concern is this scaled to fit our needs? And in many cases, the answer is not only is it scaled to fit your needs, but you've kind of overscaled in the sense of what you actually need to have available to your individual customers or to your individual users. Things that we would traditionally scale in the past, like the management server, because the management server is strictly for the purposes of entitlement management, it doesn't need to be as scaled as much as what's actually delivering that data to the end user client, that publishing data. That publishing data is what's crucial for the client, and that comes from a separate service. Now, what a lot of customers did not necessarily realize is that these roles can be separated and segmented. So whereas they needed 4 publishing servers, they went ahead and installed 4 publishing servers that also had the management server and also had the reporting services as well. The question is that a bad thing? No, it's not a bad thing. It's just it wasn't totally necessary in terms of scalability. Let's talk about what is now the most critical in terms of redundancy and availability. Content is still number one. Content is key. If there is no content, there are no apps to stream. Your content source is going to have to be probably your most important design aspect, especially if you're implementing the shared content store. In the sense of a shared content store, if the shared content store is down, then everybody is going to be down. And since in the shared content store, we don't pre-cache applications, there is really no additional remediation other than bringing that content store back online. Probably next in line will be your publishing servers. These are nice, stateless, web-based applications. Easy to scale and cheap to deploy. Everything runs in IIS now. It's a simple worker process. Your session hosts are obviously going to be critical for extranets, tablets, especially if you're republishing to iOS and to Android devices. And your database, notice your database is kind of a little bit down here, whereas in previous releases of AppV, it was a little bit higher. The database is not a single point of failure for the AppV management infrastructure anymore, at least not for the publishing side of things. So while SQL is still critical, and we do encourage you to have high availability, if SQL goes down on a Friday night, chances are you might can wait till Monday to fix it, and you won't have your weekend ruined. All right. So let's talk a little bit about critical situations, what we call crit-sits. One of the things I do in my practice is I shed light from my previous role, which was reactive. So when I'm helping customers scale out, when I'm helping customers design their AppV infrastructures, I have a lot of war stories to tell them. I have a lot of scenarios of what could go wrong and how to stop it and what the ramifications are. So one of the things I'm doing in this presentation is sharing that with you as well. So I divide causes of critical situations into two areas, expected and unexpected. Expected causes are, well, we can pretty much ascertain that this happens and this is going to be a crit sit. But I also like to point out there are some things that can slip up on us and that can be unexpected. So obviously, content and management service outages are going to cause critical situations. Resource depletion on RDS servers will cause critical situations. SQL data store failure in the past has caused critical situations. So what's nice about AppV5 is while we still have issues with content, things such as SQL data store or management infrastructure outages don't necessarily cause the crit sits that they had in the past. However, unexpected causes of crit sits, permission changes, especially on content servers and DFS shares, that can cause crit sits. Port exhaustion in the past. Do you know what the primary limit on an AppV5 management server was solely determined by the number of ephemeral ports available to RTSP for the RTP and RCP channels? So we could definitively tell you at what point an AppV5 server was going to be over capacity. Well, that's not a problem anymore because we don't use ephemeral ports for authenticating applications. Everything is now through HTTP and SMB and does not use ephemeral ports within the actual AppV protocol itself. Port exhaustion, of course, could potentially arise in external environments like RPC, for example, when you're actually connecting to an SMB share. So that's something to keep track of. Obviously, port firewall policy changes. The nice thing about AppV5 is we use standard protocols that are firewall friendly. We don't have to worry about load balancers or intermediary devices being able to support the particular protocols that we're using. And of course, SQL fiefdoms, where the SQL people are separate from the management people and SQL people arbitrarily make a change in configuration. Are they turn off Windows authentication or do something drastic? Well, that could have a ripple effect on AppV as well. And in the past, when SQL was your single point of failure, that did create critical situations. And then, of course, the famous GPO modification errors. That's going to be especially important in the V5 environment because one of the recommendations we have for client management configuration is through GPOs. So let's look now at the individual components of the AppV management system. The logical design pretty much looks like this. The administrator, be it through PowerShell or through Silverlight and XAML, will interface with the management service. This management service will then track all of this information within the management database. The management service now has to generate and send the publishing metadata to the publishing service. This publishing service, upon retrieving that data, then makes that actual flat XML file data available to the clients. The clients will then, of course, retrieve that, and if you have this option turned on the client side, the client will then send reporting information, app launch, app shutdown, app usage, client information, to the actual reporting service, which is also separate from the management service, and will store that information in a separate database. In the past, we did not segment the reporting and management database, and sometimes the reporting database would have excessive growth that would then have ramifications that would affect the management service. We've resolved that by segmenting the databases. So when planning your AtV infrastructure, we must assess the key data. Obviously, the content store is key, number one. Number two is going to be your publishing catalog. Your publishing catalog is what's going to be stored on the publishing server. You also hear this as the publishing metadata. The management data store, which is SQL-based. That's going to be all your entitlements, connection groups, and associated configurations. Your reporting data store, that's going to be dynamic information that pertains to what your clients are currently uploading. The server roles that are involved in the management of that key data will be, of course, SQL Server for managing the data store. Your content server, which can be a file share. Management server, an IIS-based worker process. Publishing server, another worker process. Reporting server, yet another worker process. It's all about IIS now. SQL Server, that's where your management database is going to be stored. What's going to be stored inside your management database? Asset registration, your packages, connection groups, your assignments to groups and machines, your user and deployment configuration, the list of your AtV administrators, and the publishing servers also have to be listed there because these are the authorized publishing servers that will then sync up on a period. By default, it's 10 minutes. It can be configured with your management servers. This means when you're testing, and we'll talk about this in a future slide, you have to bear that in mind. And then, of course, it will also store your optional reporting database, which is your uploaded XML data. Your content server is going to be your streaming source. It's also in your package source, especially if you're using the shared content store. Shared content store, again, and I can't tout this feature enough. It streams to memory instead of streams to disk. It will reduce storage of your packages anywhere from 80 to 95%. And it has no additional management requirements. The shared content store is actually a bit that is flipped on the client side. It tells the client, okay, instead of streaming from this source and caching it fully to the AtV cache, we're just going to cache a couple of executable PE headers and everything else is going to be exclusively in memory. Shared content versus streaming. If the experience is pretty much going to be the same except there's no concept of feature block one. By the way, feature block one and AppX, which is the AtV format basically, not necessarily the best thing anymore. They may have touched on that in some of the previous presentations. But because we're doing everything to memory, there is no need to worry about feature block one. Of course, there's not going to be a streaming progress indicator because we're not actually caching this to the disk, so there's no reason to have that. But again, there's no offline option with the shared content store. Now, what you can do is you can manually pre-cache an individual application by running the mount AtV client package command. And that one package would then be cached to disk without affecting the other applications. Now, your three critical web-based applications or web services, the management, publishing, and reporting services. First of all, if you're not familiar with IIS, learn IIS. The IIS management snap-in is now your operations manager for or your operations management tool for your AtV services. It's where you're going to cycle your services. It's where you're actually going to adjust things like service accounts for your worker processes. You've probably noticed with AtV5, there is no service in Service Control Manager. These are all handled within the IIS management. Now, of course, you could cycle the IIS in these services, but the problem with that will cycle all of your worker processes simultaneously. And what you might want to do is, if you're, for example, wanting to speed up an entitlement to publish, you might want to go into IIS and actually recycle your services there. But you're now managing web services. This is all through the IIS console. The IIS console is going to be one of your key troubleshooting interfaces as well. The services run as worker processes. The management server has a web UI console. Everything in the web UI can pretty much be done through PowerShell as well. This is where entitlements are managed. At vadmins, add remove packages, you can modify the configuration of the application, and of course, add and change publishing servers. The publishing server is where the catalog is maintained. The catalog is going to be a file that's going to be updated every time the management server syncs with the publishing server. It's going to have one huge file that's going to be all your published packages, your published connection groups, and your user deployment configuration. Now, what this means is, for an entitlement to actually take effect for an individual user, you actually have to make the entitlement change and then make sure the publishing server has synchronized with the management server. We call this a metadata refresh or a publishing metadata refresh. Then you'll want your clients to then sync with the publishing server at that point. So if you're actually testing this, it's pretty simple. What a lot of people will do in their test environment is they may have all the services running on one machine. Well, they'll just make the entitlement change, do an IIS reset, and then all is good. But if you're putting this into production, you may have three or four publishing servers. You will need to make sure the publishing servers have all synced with the management server. And of course, it's a 10-minute interval anyway. Now, people ask, can I set that to like 30 seconds or a minute? That's a little bit of overkill. I prefer the default setting, personally. And the location? It's just a flat file within program data. Pretty easy to isolate. Please do not modify the publishing metadata file, by the way. So the entitlement to publish process, the publishing services and management services run in separate IIS worker processes. So this has to be done even if they're running on the same machine. The admin will add a package, configuration, connection groups, whatever, assign them to an AD group. Then what happens is the DBM publishing sequence number has now been updated. The publishing server will then sync with the management server, and then the client can now sync with the publishing server to actually get the updated entitlement. The reporting server collects reporting data from the client, stores it inside the database. The reporting does not have a UI built in. As I said earlier, we do not have canned reports within the management interface. We do have some for SSRS that you can actually download. And then no interaction with the management server or publishing server. The reporting server is a completely separate entity right down to the database. And it's technically optional. You only need to install it if you're using reporting. And again, the customer, you'll use your own SSRS or preferred report viewer to view your reporting data. And again, here is the link to actually download our SSRS samples. So make sure you download this deck. Client roles. The client role are, I want to take a little bit of time to kind of mention these as well, even though this is primarily a server discussion. The client has separate agents to coincide with each individual service. There's a publishing agent that, of course, interfaces with the publishing server. There is a reporting agent that does the same thing with the reporting services. And again, the key assets for the client are going to be, obviously, the catalogs and manifest for the individual client, especially crucial in an RDS machine because it's going to be effective for many users. For globally published applications, they're going to be located within program data, and for users, it's going to be located in roaming app data. That's a very good question. The client roles are one all or nothing. Even if it's not being used, for example, the reporting agent is still there. It's just dormant until you actually turn on the reporting feature. Correct, yes. Yes, unlike the server MSI where you can actually choose individual services components, the single executable or MSI for the AppV client installs all of these elements, yes. And of course, your integration junction points are going to be key because this is what links the user or the entire machine with the immutable package cache. And again, global, of course, is located in program data. User targeted are going to be in local app data. And then, of course, your packages, which are stored in and package groups, which, of course, are actually recorded and stored in your package cache. All right. Now let's talk a little bit about your resources for deployment. People ask, where are the documentation? Where's the documentation? Here's the documentation. Client configuration. We have several ways to deploy the client. You can deploy using installer switches. You can configure the client and control it through PowerShell as well, using the set AppV client configuration. You can control through group policy. In addition, we also have a table of options. That last TechNet link is crucial because it tells you all of the options and what the respective equivalent is, whether you're doing this through GPO, whether you're doing this upon installation, or whether you're doing this with PowerShell, what specific PowerShell variant of set AppV client configuration would apply. Server resources. Many of you, especially when you're pushing out and scaling out, are going to want to know how we can automate the deployment of AppV. We have a valuable resource on TechNet on how to deploy the AppV5 server using a script. And then, of course, if you're going to do role separation, which I do encourage, especially for large infrastructures, how to install the management reporting databases on separate computers from the management reporting services. Now, for those out there who don't use Config Manager and use the AppV infrastructure, especially for worldwide deployments and have global clustered-based data centers, you are going to find this to be very crucial because you probably will soon discover that I only need to have certain services deployed in certain locations. So this is going to be a very crucial resource for me. And then, of course, how to deploy the reporting server, because here's what we're finding. A lot of people are deploying the reporting server after the fact. They needed a resource on how to retroactively deploy reporting services in an existing AppV infrastructure. In addition, how to install a publishing server on a remote computer if you just want to scale out your publishing servers. How to install a management server on a standalone computer and connect it to an existing database. And of course, how to pre-create the AppV management reporting databases using SQL scripts. I actually prefer a blog post because this blog post, in addition to mentioning the steps, also tells you some additional elements in terms of ensuring that the appropriate security credentials get placed within those scripts. Okay, let's talk a little bit about sizing. We have a sizing document published. How many of you had a chance to check it out? Sizing AppV infrastructures is a lot like sizing IIS. However, there are certain intricacies that people are asking about in terms of what's specific to AppV, especially the database sizing. So in addition to giving you that document as a reference, I want to talk a little bit about some single maximums that you could probably get that have actually been successfully tested. You know, 20,000 clients could target a single publishing server to obtain package refreshes. A single management server can support up to 50 publishing servers. A single reporting server can process 500 concurrent active connections. This is incredible. And a single reporting server can process a maximum of 1,500 concurrent connections. XML data, supporting 500,000 clients, machine, five publishing servers, two reporting servers. Now, there is a caveat that we'll talk about with configuring a random delay. Two management servers, which is really only for high availability purposes, and one database. Package manifest size, the number of files, and extension points affect time to publish as well. And we've taken this even a step further with SP2 and Hotfix 4, introducing a new feature called preserve user integrations upon login, which prevent a lot of that unnecessary deintegration and reintegration. And we've also included additional guidance to where you can even automate that and have that in a permanent state using a UEM manager. And of course, if you're going to go that route, we always recommend UEV. Why do we recommend UEV? What's the best reason to use UEV? Because if you bought MDOP, you own it already. Yes. Reporting delay. When configuring reporting, one of the options to configure is a delay. This is a scheduled task that will basically generate a delay between zero and that reporting random delay and will wait the specified duration before sending that data. The random delay is equal to about 4 times the number of clients divided by the average request per second. So for example, if you have 500 clients with 120 requests per second, the random delay is 4 times 500 divided by 120, which is approximately 17 minutes. So DB stretch, server stretch, 12,000 packages. Client stretch, I've seen 2,500 packages on a single machine. I've seen 500 packages published to a single user. Now, let me give you some context there. We're just doing DB stretch. 500 apps published to a single user is not a likely scenario. I acknowledge that. I'm just sizing for the management database. Well, people ask, how can I predict how big my management database is going to get? How can I forecast, or how large a database am I going to have to allocate? Well, we use a basic metric, which I will just leave as is here. But essentially, it's going to be X plus Y plus Z, where X equals a combination or an aggregation of your package records, manifest, custom configuration, added to your package entitlements, and of course, your connection group. And of course, you will probably want to also factor in some change history as well. So for those of you who are calculating that, we have this nice little resource slide for you as well. Reporting database, that's going to be something that's more fluid. So just to kind of tell you a little bit about what you're going to be tracking, you're going to be tracking launch records, client data, package and package group registrations on the client. So the individual data itself is small. However, as you employ more and more and more users and use more and more reporting, this is going to increase. So you might want to factor in occasional database cleanup. We have some built-in stored procedures, but those stored procedures primarily just manage the transference of temporary data into permanent tables. RDS is going to report a lot more, obviously. Especially since if you have not modified the data cache limit on the RDS side, it's going to probably want to report more frequently, and you probably want to tune that a little bit, because I have seen some early reports where data becomes extremely large, and it definitely takes a long time to complete the reporting upload because of the fact that the reporting delay was so long and there was a whole bunch of launches and app usage going on, allowing that client-side XML cache to grow extensively. Yes, I know, I was told there would be no math. But I limited it. I did limit it. Content. Sizing your content, of course, is going to depend. This is always the most difficult one to get our hands around, because your sizing cannot be a generic formula, because it's going to depend on the total size of your applications. Obviously, you're going to have a mixture of developer applications, application suites. So, but the good thing is, people usually have their applications already in a central repository, whether they've been doing app compat testing or basically maintaining a package store for use with their software distribution system. But you'll find that AppV, in terms of the package format itself, is going to use the APEX format, which is actually going to compress the package using, you probably have already tried this with by renaming the appv package to a zip extension and being able to go in and browse it just like you would browse any other compressed folder. Content, of course, needs to be sized appropriately for performance. This is a file share. This file share is going to be accessed either through HTTP or it's going to be accessed through SMB. So the appropriate file server tunings are going to be very essential. Obviously, in some cases, network stack tuning is going to be required. Then we get to the shared content store, and now we really have to pay attention to how we kind of size things. Because for the application load, it's all going to be about bandwidth, bandwidth, bandwidth. If you're launching an application for that first time, especially if it's Office, if you're using Office or if you're using ArcGIS or if you're using some high-end application, that first launch is all going to be about getting that information into the client memory as quickly as possible. Application use, well, that's going to be memory, memory, memory. Especially in RDS environments where you're going to have multiple users. Now, the nice thing about APV is not going to create separate memory spaces for every single instance of that application. So the shared content store is going to be nice and optimal in RDS, but remember, the more different applications that you're running on the RDS environment with all of the users that you have connecting for the shared content store, it's going to mean more memory demand to prevent stream faults to keep that experience universal with a stream-to-disk scenario. And the general feedback we get from customers is, when we're launching Word for the first time, we see the spinning donut for about 3 or 4 seconds. But then after that, every other launch is fine. So, we can live with the 3 or 4 seconds of the spinning circle or the spinning donut in terms of the drastic amount of disk space that they're saving. Publishing is still going to create the sparse files. We're still going to have the same configuration and performance recommendations with the shared content store when it comes to publishing. The difference between the shared content store and the traditional stream-to-disk scenarios is we maintain the sparse files. We never fill them up with data when it comes to the shared content store. So at V5 shared content store, it's designed for VDI. Not just VDI, but RDS, but RDS and VDI are kind of bridging together as one technology. Be it a Microsoft solution, Citrix solution, or the other one, which I won't mention. But the bottom line is, shared content store, like APV, is broker agnostic, designed to be broker agnostic, designed to be hypervisor agnostic. We prefer that you use a Microsoft stack, but we understand. We know that Citrix is now telling customers to use us at V instead of their own application streaming environment, which they killed. So we understand that it's the ecosystem. But the challenge, of course, with the shared content store is going to be getting it down in terms of what is that sweet spot. We traditionally with VDI density is a key. How many VMs can we squeeze on a hypervisor? How many XenApp servers can we provision on a hypervisor with PVS? All of that's a goal, but you may find that your density may fall back a bit, but what you're gaining with the shared content store is going to be more valuable in terms of footprint reduction. But the general variables I use for the shared content store, number of users times the average number of apps running, try to get an average of the app size in terms of assets. Bandwidth for first launch, again, is going to depend on the minimum launch threshold, your average app memory requirement. And I throw in something at the last minute, which I find it's been very helpful, especially in siloing, particularly RDS. Personas, personas, personas. When I talk about personas, I'm talking about that user. We have information worker as a persona. We have IT pro as a persona. We have developer as a persona. You know, information workers using lightweight applications, we can stick them on hypervisors that we've packed with VMs, 2 gig VMs, 4 gig VMs. But, you know, for those developer applications, and we're using shared content store, we're going to need more memory for those RDS VMs and for those desktop VMs. So it's just part of the consideration when sizing and planning for shared content store. Those large apps, by the way, drastic space reduction. Here's an example of an IBM developer tool, 4.57 gigs. Actual size on disk, 91 megs. That's the kind of benefit you get with the shared content store. However, I'll use this to also point out that this package also has 23,863 files. 23,863 files means that those sparse files are created. When are those sparse files created? At publishing time. This is an example of an application that you can that can seriously throw a wrench into your publishing experience prior to Hotfix 4. But thanks to Hotfix 4, these large apps benefit from preserve user integrations on login, which is a new configuration option. And it's another reason why you might want to adopt some of the strategy and recommendations that have been provided in that performance document that we've released alongside of Hotfix 4. Network streaming. I find that HTTP and HTTPS for streaming is fine if you're streaming to desktop. It's definitely the option if you're doing extranet streaming or streaming through VPNs. But what we're finding is feature block one, thanks to AppX, is not really beneficial in HTTP LAN. SMB2 is the minimum file streaming protocol that you need to be using, preferably SMB3. If you're working with VDI in data centers, you should be using, especially for shared content store, SMB. And also, real quick, beware of the default allow high-cost launch gotcha in Win8.1 and Win8 if you're doing extranet streaming. By default, this high-cost launch feature is only applicable in Windows 8 or Windows 8.1, but if you're connecting, for example, using MiFi or connecting over an extranet and it's detected as a high-cost network, by default, AppV is not set to allow for high-cost launch. And please use SMB in data centers. RDS. Your RDS clients are not going to change in terms of sizing with V5. It's still all going to be about memory and CPU. Again, I recommend... I recommend taking a look at our RDS load simulation tool. And we also have a nice capacity planning document on session host capacity planning, which will be beneficial for you in RDS land. Of course, Citrix provides its own preferred capacity planning documentation as well. Okay. I want to talk a little bit now about high availability and fault-tolerant technologies and how they apply to AppV. Network load balancing. Network load balancing is a choice for redundancy and resiliency using AppV and the IIS-based services, be it Windows load balancing, which we have a network load balancing guide available, or you can use third party, be it F5, NetScaler, or Cisco. The nice thing about the NLB features is because we're actually load balancing HTTP, HTTPS, it's very easy to implement. Failover clustering. Failover clustering is available for some of the AppV services. The thing is, failover clustering doesn't provide data redundancy. Failover clustering just means reduced mean time during failure or between failures. You can add Hyper-V virtualization and shared storage to bring live migration to where you actually have no MBTF. Or, as I mentioned, VMware vMotion with shared storage if they insist on using ESXi. Well, that, the reality of my surroundings as a consultant is, you know, I work with the customer's environments. And again, we have failover clustering guides available, especially the new technologies that have come in Windows Server 2012. DFSR, very crucial and probably going to be your best source for content replication and redundancy. You can also combine it with failover clustering. My buddy Ned Pyle has some great articles on deploying DFS replication on a Windows failover cluster. But don't stop there. You can actually virtualize DFSR as well and make that highly available through a technology like Hyper-V and have live migration going for that. And of course, we have a nice little blog article here on safely virtualizing DFSR. Mirroring. This is a very popular question nowadays because rather than failover clustering, mirroring is becoming the preferred choice in SQL data centers because it not only increases high availability, but it also provides data redundancy. It duplicates the database storage, often leverages log shipping to do this. And of course, we have lots of documentation out there on setting up SQL mirroring and connection string clarifications. Now, while those were generic resources, let me take the time now to point out @V SQL high availability resources. We've published documentation on TechNet with regards to how to set up SQL failover clustering, SQL mirroring, and the SQL mirroring page now has included support for SQL 2012 always-on availability groups. Yay! All right. Finally, I want to talk about outages. What's going to happen when things fail and what you have to contend with and what you need to plan for. If the SQL data store fails, here's what you have. You have a worthless management server. The publishing server will be just fine. Although you cannot manage, clients can still receive publishing information. Publishing servers cannot do metadata refreshes with the management server, but there's nothing to refresh because SQL is down anyway. Even if the management server is fine, if the SQL data store is down, not a lot can be done. Possible negative user experience, no new entitlements. So what are our capabilities of keeping this highly available? Again, we have failover clustering, we have mirroring, and of course mirroring also includes availability groups. Content store. What's the ramification of service loss? Clients cannot stream new apps. And if you're in shared content mode, clients cannot launch any apps. This is the one that's going to get you dragged out of bed. Possible negative user experiences. Clients are not able to use apps. You have a critical business down issue. So high availability load balance capabilities, DFSR share, DFSR coupled with load balancing, file share cluster resource is also an option. And I included in a specific link for that we've published for using a file share cluster resource for shared content store. And this is the ugly scenario. We have two types of ugly scenarios in terms of the client experience. You have the application failed to launch. This may be due to a network failure. That's more of a generic one. And you'll find that in a lot of operational issues. But when you have a shared content store failure, you may have stuff fail while the application is running. And that can be dangerous because you could also have application crashes or see bizarre messages like, so-and-so is not a valid Win32 application. So it's very important that you want, you know, low latency data centers, high bandwidth, highly available content stores for shared content store. And if when it's up, it works great. It's just, it's got to stay up. It's very critical. The management server, ramification of service loss, no management console access. Possible negative user experience, well, there's no new entitlements. But again, if the management server goes down, doesn't affect the end user clients in terms of publishing. You don't need to have as many management servers as you had in the past. That's not our primary scaled out entity. Your high availability load balance capabilities, obviously load balancing because it's a web-based service. The publishing server, here we go. This is where we can run into problems. If the publishing server goes down, the clients cannot sync with the server. They cannot retrieve updated publishing information. Possible negative user experiences? Well, no new applications, you'll get errors upon sync. But we don't have this forced online mode that we used to have in 4.5, where you actually, if you were connected to a publishing server and you did not allow offline mode and the publishing server was down, even if the apps were fully cached because it wanted to phone home upon every application launch, you could still have critical business down issues and lack of availability of applications. We don't phone home every time an application is launched now. So if a publishing server goes down, the likely effect is going to be no new applications and errors upon synchronization. And again, we can make the publishing server highly available by load balancing. So, I appreciate everyone coming, and what I'd like to do now is open the floor for questions. But first, I have some housekeeping that I'm mandated to do here at TechEd. So review the session objectives, and we talked a little bit about the load balancing, failover, replication, mirroring, all the rapid provisioning options. Implement recommended practices. Notice I said recommended practices. Current recommended practices for streaming bandwidth management, shared content store design. Understand how to architect app V for redundancy and resiliency. We have some related content. We have, of course, since we're already Thursday afternoon, a lot of this has already passed, but if you didn't catch the Project VRC chat this morning on performance, it is recorded, and you definitely need to check it out. If you did not catch Tom and Karam's, especially if you're interested in kind of a 1-200 level package experience on the client side, that's also been recorded. Obviously, you couldn't attend WinB215 because it's the same time as this one. But it, too, is also being recorded. So those of you who are working with Citrix, I definitely encourage that you take a look at that. And, of course, we have a hands-on lab on implementing APV5 with System Center 2012 R2 Config Manager. I think Wally Mead did this lab, so you know it's good, if you're familiar with Wally Mead from Config Manager world. And then, of course, the Windows Track resources. The one that's the most important is the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack. Microsoft.com/MDOP. And I end with a quote. They asked us to come up to a quote. For my customers, I have nothing to offer but blood, toils, tears, and sweat. That actually sounds better with a Churchill accent, doesn't it? Let me try it. I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. I had a backup if that bombed, by the way, and that was, look at the pretty kitty. Kitty selfie. Look at the pretty kitty.
Keep your day job.
Yes, I know. Thank you. Any questions? You want to come to the mic? So the question was, especially if you're deploying 32-bit applications in Windows 2012 RDSH environments, does App V address some of the 32-64 incompatibility issues? It's not designed to actually be bitness compatible or to actually emulate in terms of if there are incompatibility issues, but the nice thing about 32-bit app, the 32-bit app can be sequenced with the 32-bit sequencer and still to be deployed on a 64-bit host. So it can be deployed. It's just if there are functionality issues when the application would run natively as a 32-bit Apple and a 64-bit. At V is not going to make those go away necessarily. So. Yes, sir. Okay, so the question was, is the shared content one gigantic file like it used to be with 4.6, or is it a series of individual packages? It is a series of individual packages, which means you can use the shared content store, or you can use the same content store for stream to memory and stream to disk. The question was, can you have clients point to different publishing servers through like group policy? Yes. You can, and in fact, we encourage you to use GPOs for that. Like if you wanted to align them with like site-based GPOs, for example. Correct. Yep. So you could have like a GPO with a WMI filter that affects your VDI, your virtual desktops, and have that GPO configured for a specific publishing server. Yeah. Yes. Yes, sir. For example, the question was, can we talk a little bit about high availability in terms of how the publishing servers are listed in the management console as opposed to how we'd list them on the client side? That's a very good question. Because we're communicating specifically with individual publishing servers and going to the management server. For example, if you have load balancers and you're talking about VIPs, where you may want your client to be pointing to a virtual name or virtual IP, you don't necessarily want that set up in the management server. You want the individual publishing servers by their basic name. It's a very good question. Yes, sir.
Is there any drawbacks for the shared resource cache if it's being front-ended, if you're using SMB being front-ended by, say, a NetApp appliance or a not a true real file server?
I have dealt with that. The only problem I have with that would be a problem that I would have. And by the way, the question was, any ramifications or issues with using third-party SMB CIFS file servers like NetApp appliances or any other type of NAS appliance? The only problems I run into is permission compatibility, especially if there are certain SIDs that aren't recognized on the NetApp side. But that would be regardless of shared content versus any traditional file share. In fact, on that note, we have a real popular one where it doesn't recognize a network service SID. And so we have to go in and actually create a service account. And by the way, all of these issues with NetApp are completely surmountable. We just, a lot of times, we'll create service accounts and associate them with the worker process in IIS. And that's where, again, that knowledge of IIS is very crucial. Yes, sir. Hey, Steve, can you tell me about the AtV roadmap? I would have to pawn you off on a PM for that. Primarily one of our marketing PMs. I can give you his contact information. Would you recommend pre-caching the client metadata using a shared content store? Yes. In fact, that's discussed in our Hotfix 4 guidance. But I use the term pre-cache. Right, just the metadata, actually. And in fact, UEM templates could probably help in that regard, too, I think. Yeah. Yes, sir.
So I just think
By default, the question was, how can you confirm what protocol you're using to stream the application to the client? Primarily, the first place you want to go to is the package source root. If the package source root is specified as a URL, then it's going to use HTTP. If it's specified using a UNC path, it's going to use SMB. Be careful of things like of opt-out options within the manifest that may be there if you have a specific URL specified there. But by default, that's not an issue. Now, there's some scenarios where you're not really going to have a choice in the manner. Like if you're using Config Manager integration, they will stream everything through HTTP. So the question was, I'm new to AppV. I'm currently working in an existing environment of mostly Citrix products and Config Manager. And of course, I'm trying to move over from Citrix streaming model to actual AppV as a streaming model. Now, where would be a good place to start? Well, first and foremost, from an educational standpoint, I always recommend the AppV5 trial guide as the primary first source, because it allows you to spin up a couple of VMs and you just actually play with it just to get your hands dirty, walk through the sequencing process, and get yourself fairly educated upon that. However, you're going to have a bigger task at hand in terms of not only getting an infrastructure in place or deciding if you want to use your existing Config Manager infrastructure in place, but you've also got an app ecosystem that you have to convert over to AppV. And you've got to make a decision, what can I do here? Do I have to resequence all of these applications? Possibly, but I'll tell you this. There was a tool announced on a blog, I think it was Monday, at Citrix. Citrix has a conversion tool that will actually convert Citrix streaming profiles over to the AppV5 packaging format. I have only heard of it. I haven't seen it, but I know it is out there. Oh. Yeah, welcome to Sophie's Choice at V Edition. Yeah, welcome. Right. I have found that generally, conversion, you might get 30 to 40% if you're lucky, in terms, because of a lot of what we have to do in terms of scripting and advanced configuration. Yeah, our conversion is not perfect either, so. It's better now, yes. Yes, sir.
Say I'm using Citrix provisioning services for Citrix Synapse servers. What do you recommend as the most efficient way to deliver that content? Here.
So the question was, I'm using Citrix Synapse provisioned as non-persistent by Citrix provisioning services, correct?
Synapse server 6.5.
Right. And the question was, what's probably the best way to go about delivering content to them? The AppV content is pretty simple. I would recommend I would recommend the shared content store for that model.
You're kind of doing double duty though, then.
Well, what
into the Citrix, the cache for the PBS, when it kind of slow down the launching.
Well, what a lot of our customers are doing is they're actually redirecting the AppV package source root, which is where the AppV package cache is, to actually a write cache. And but you're talking about the effect of double duty on memory, where you've got a lot of these things already running as RAM drives.
And on the network behind the scenes.
And on the network behind the scenes. Well, it's going to be a factor of what resources are most crucial to you in terms of cost. I mean,
these packages are kind of large.
Right. And so you're kind of worried about the robbing Peter to pay Paul scenario in terms of memory versus disk space?
I'm more worried about that first launch.
Ah. Well, that first launch, you're going to see a significant delay on that first launch.
Is it better to script it so on boot up of that image that it pre-caches all those?
Well, you don't want to pre-cache per se, but you mean pre-launch. Yeah, the app. That's probably a good way to go, yeah. But another thing is what I was mentioning in terms of siloing your servers based off of personas, to where certain apps are you can tune towards certain apps more resources to those individual VMs. Any other questions? This has been great. Yes, sir. There's an orchestration broker behind the scenes that's going to make sure that you're not having multiple address spaces for the exact same application. Otherwise, that would be a very bad scenario. Yeah. As soon as you get the fifth or sixth Office app opened, that would be... No, it's... We actually make Office available now as an AppV package. We use connection groups to integrate add-ins with. Oh yeah. Oh, I could talk for hours on add-ins and integration. Yeah. Yep. Yes, sir.
I've got a question. I'm kind of new to this whole entire aspect here, but we currently have a current configuration manager infrastructure already going. We're using Config Manager, Ops Manager, System Center products. We're wanting to bring on board an AppV and a VDI solution. Is there any which ways I should be looking for a VDI solution in regards to using AppV? Should I be looking toward a Citrix, or should I keep it all in-house?
So you're asking a Microsoft employee, should I choose a Citrix or a Microsoft solution?
That's a community question.
Both of them are good.
Okay.
Yes. We love you both equally, yes. Yes, regardless of whether it's a Microsoft or a Citrix solution, we find that our customers' best experience is using publishing infrastructure for non-persistent scenarios, be it any solution. It's more of a term to determine, are you doing static VMs or are you using pooled VMs? But then the choice is, well, you know, what if I'm using both? I don't want to stand up two infrastructures, so I really like an infrastructure that'll get the job done for everything. And people find that the publishing server is getting the job done for everything. No, that's fine.
You're talking non-persistent, so is that impacting like the VDI cache, the cache for the VDI? If you don't persist or you persist,
right, if you persist the VM, then the apps, then the app component, the resources, would still remain, yes. Yeah. Right, it would remain persistent. All those resources, if you're using shared content store, all the sparse files would still be there. If you're streaming to disk, then the package cache would remain intact. Once you've cached an application, it stays cached until it's removed from the cache through an operation. Yeah. Well, now for Citrix Profile Manager, which is what we classify as a UEM, you would want to read our documentation on what settings need to roam. Yes, because I think with CPM you actually configure that in a GPO for CPM. Yeah. So. Yes, sir. The question was, and by, I think your question is, to break it down is, will there be an AppV desktop stream or device client for Android, iOS, et cetera, where the AppV client actually sits natively there instead of having to go through a Citrix or an RDS broker? I don't know. No. Remember earlier? We've had that question a lot. Click to run software development kit. When are we going to get a click to run SDK? I'm right there with you on that. I'd love that, but I don't know of any roadmap for that. So. That would be cool. That would be. This is Philip Bacon from the MDOT team. That's a very valid point. For those, are we still recording? For those listening at home, the concern that this customer has is like a lot of other customers. You know, if they have CEM integrated and they would probably want to continue using that, if it had some things that the publishing infrastructure was doing implemented into it, and their fear is if they stand up an AppV5 publishing infrastructure, then 6 months later they find out that a couple of patches to Config Manager now allows this to happen, and they now have two infrastructures that they really don't need anymore. And so the question for that we need to take to our respective PMs is, you know, what's the deal on the roadmap in terms of, and that's probably more for a joint query to the Config Manager at V team, kind of as a combined set of partners. Honestly, if that fresh VM would get those apps provisioned within 30 seconds to a minute, I think people would move to Config Manager for non-persistent. And maybe throw some reporting in. People like AppV, we've got this question before, and I know customers are doing it, even though it's technically not supported, but they use Config Manager integration, but then they also have stood up reporting services and have just used PowerShell to turn on reporting, and literally the only component of the AppV infrastructure they're using is the reporting because they like the AppV reporting system, especially for non-persistent scenarios. All right. Thank you. Thank you.